The Starlight Lounge presents An Evening with the Progressive Box.
Old moon, yeah. That's Hugo tickling the ivories. He just saved by bundling home and auto with Progressive. Gonna finally buy a ring for that gal of yours, Hugo? Send her my condolences. Hi-oh! This next one's for you, too. There's a burglar in my heart. Thank you.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Discounts not available in all states or situations.
Good evening, class. My name is Tony Spears, and you're listening to Binary Gamer, where we get to learn a little something about video games. Binary Gamer is brought to you by homeofnerds.com, your one-stop shop for everything news, reviews, tips, and tricks. Everything that is video games on the internet, you can find at homeofnerds.com. Make sure to check us out over on YouTube, youtube.com/homeofnerds, and hit us up on Twitter, at homeofnerds. So, this is a special podcast because I have my very first actual, like, in-house, like, student. It's amazing. So, I want to introduce my good buddy Merrick from Home of Nerds. Hello, Merrick.
Hi there, Tony. Lovely to be here. Thanks for having me.
Ah, no problem, man. Thank you for coming on the show. So, what do you do at Home of Nerds exactly?
Well, I play indie games to record videos, then some form of a first impression reviews, and then write follow-up articles for them.
Very nice. So, man, so you're actually in the process of like going through, like doing full playthroughs and reviews and everything like that for different indie games?
Yeah, it's pretty much first impression, like when I play games that I never played before, to play them for the very first time and see how it feels and mostly embarrass myself.
Wow. Well, I mean, I don't know about embarrassing yourself. I mean, sometimes those indie games can be rough. Let's be totally real. Not all of them are like the polished, amazing gems we would like them to be.
Yeah, some of them are pretty rough. And sometimes the indies don't really hit the spot right with the difficulty. And some games are nearly impossible to play.
Yeah, I've definitely ran into that with some stuff that I've tried in like early access on Steam. There's just been a couple games I've played that are just, like, I don't know where they were coming from when they were thinking about their difficulty scaling, but, like, it starts out pretty easy, and then at some point you just hit this wall, and you're like, I don't know if I just suck, if this game is way too hard, or if I have, or there's some balance of that, but, I've definitely ran into that scenario where you're just like, I don't know what level you're on, but it is obviously a higher level than mine.
I think it does happen quite a lot when there's not enough game testing with the community.
Yeah. I mean, stuff definitely has to go through that process where you're bouncing back and forth between people that are testing, you know, playing yourself, and then also, you know, like just kind of putting it out into the wild a little bit and being like, hey, person I don't know, like, what's your impression of this game? Because in that way you get a lot of different feedback and you can fix different things.
Yeah, I think that's something that definitely benefits all, you know, every game and all the games. And every time somebody makes a game, it should be part of the process somewhere down the pipeline to, you know, release it to a lot of people, just like you said.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. So real quick, before we get into the lesson today, what have you been playing lately, aside from the countless indie games that you've been reviewing?
Well, it's been mostly indie games, to be honest. Some of them that I reviewed, some of them I just enjoyed for the fun of them. So Long Earth is like a platformer game where you run on a planet and you need to go between various planets to complete puzzles and unlock stuff. And it's a steampunky. It's a cool game. So that was So Long Earth. But outside of the indie games, I usually play a lot of Kerbal Space Program, to be honest.
Man, Kerbal Space Program is one of those games that I've watched like a lot of videos on, and I've never actually played it myself, but I have a feeling that if I played it, I probably wouldn't be very good, because I would just be that guy that just wants to build the biggest rocket ever, slap a Kerbal on top of it, and just launch him off, and it probably wouldn't even leave the launch pad.
I think that's what everybody does.
Yeah, I mean, from what I've seen, especially in different videos, a lot of it is trial and error. There's a great series, I don't know if you're familiar with Giant Bomb on YouTube or just on the internet in general, but those guys.
I haven't seen a series on Kerbal.
No, they have one called Project Beast. It is 12 episodes of the most hilarious shit I've ever seen in my entire life, only because it's three guys that just aren't very good at Kerbal Space Program. And they're like, they're essentially, it's like an idiot's guide to Kerbal Space Program. A lot of it is like cautionary tales of what not to do. But the best part of it is it's three guys, and like they're getting different tips and tricks from the community and like the comment section and stuff like that. And they pretty much set out a goal of they were going to build a rocket that would fly one Kerbal to the moon and then fly it back. And like that was the whole goal. And in the process, they strand like 15 or 16 Kerbals.
That's still good numbers.
Yeah, I mean, it was actually a lot fewer like stranded than I had expected. But what was really great though, I think, is toward the tail end of the series, after they had got one to moon and back, they decided they were going to do like a rescue mission. So they rescued. They sent rockets up and rescued all the Kerbals and brought them back home, like, except for like a few that like died on reentry and stuff like that. But for the most part, they got all the Kerbals back. It's actually a really great video series to watch if you like Kerbal Space Program. And I mean, even if you don't like Kerbal Space Program, it has some incredibly funny moments.
Sounds like they went through a very steep learning curve.
Yeah, it was. It definitely was one of those things of you got to see all of the glory and all of the folly that was their process. It was pretty good.
That sounds very nice. I usually watch, you know, the one and only Scott Manley, that everybody who knows Kerbal Space Program, I guess, knows him because he was one of the first people who actually started playing it a little bit seriously and explaining the science behind all the stuff happening on the screen. But it's less fun than, you know, putting a Kerbal on a rocket and you have no idea what's going to happen. You just go for it. That's more fun.
Yeah. I know they had a special guest on there. It might have been Scott Manley that went on there and, like, he was helping them out. And the only thing I remember from most of the episodes is a lot of explanation of Delta V, but that was about it.
Oh, yeah.
Delta V apparently is the bread and butter of rocket science.
Yeah, the rocket equation is the thing you have to master to play Kerbal Space Program.
Yeah,
no, I'm just kidding.
And I'm not good at math, so I think it's definitely a game that I will watch from afar, but I will probably never actually get into myself because I'm always scared of finding that game that sucks me in that makes me stop playing everything else.
Yeah, Kerbal Space Program is that game. Even if you're not good at math, just doing the trial and error is all the fun because you can see stuff explode, and that's amazing.
Yeah, and like I said, I'm always scared of those types of games because, like, I have friends that I used to play a lot of different games with all the time, and then they like I have two friends specifically that discovered Rocket League and still have not come back. Like, that's all that is what they do. They play Rocket League and they don't do anything else, and it like. It really scares me to find that kind of game. I've played Rocket League and it's cool, but it's definitely not something I could invest that kind of time in. But the same thing can be said for like different MOBAs. Like, I know people that all they do is play League of Legends or just play Dota, you know, different games like that. And I'm always scared of finding that game. I'm always scared I'm going to find the game that just sucks me in and never lets go.
Yeah. Online games are dangerous in this respect.
Yeah. I mean, especially in this day and age where, you know, a lot of different online games now have so many different, you know, like, I guess you say, like, internal systems, like internal metas that hook people in. It's just, it's gotten to the point to where a lot of games, like, really can become a platform. And as long as those games keep coming out with, you know, different updates, like, prime example is Overwatch. Like, Overwatch has a pretty steady player base on a normal basis, but Blizzard just keeps cranking out different like seasonal events or just like different like who else is putting out content for the Lunar New Year? Blizzard is, and because of that, their freaking server attendance is higher than it's ever been. Like, everyone's like, oh my god, I have to get this Mei skin, or oh my god, I have to get the D.Va skin, and they're going through and playing like crazy. Like, it's almost impossible to not find a game. You know what I mean? Like, some games after a while they just kind of die off, but. No, like games like that, they hook you. So, man.
Yeah, I think one of the safer ones are single player games, because once it's multiplayer, you know, Blizzard and all the other big companies, they know how we work and they know we like unlockables, Steve achievements, and all the shinies we can get. So,
oh yeah,
they know what they're doing.
I mean, I'm definitely guilty of you know, playing that extra game just to be able to get that loot box. In fact, that was me last night. I was sitting here getting stomped in 3v3, trying to get my last game in to get the third loot box for the week. And I was just like, why am I still doing this? Like, I don't need this loot box. But in my head, the lizard part of my brain was like, no. You need that dopamine hit of opening up that loot box. I mean, it's pretty much what
it's only
is.
50 more points.
Yeah, exactly. Like one more win and I would have had the loot box. And like in my head, I was like, no, I want to play something else. But the rest of me was just like, nope, you're going to get this loot box. And I eventually did. And I got nothing good out of it. Like, I got a couple voice packs and some gold. Woohoo! No good skins. I was really upset. I was like, all that for nothing.
But it felt good just before you opened it.
Oh yeah, like that excitement right before you open it up. Like, that's it. That's what it's all about.
Yeah, that's the selling point. Yeah. I feel for you. I was the same a couple of years ago with Warface and Warframe. Same story. You play and you go, just one more game. I mean, I know I can quit. It's just that I don't want to yet because I will unlock this in two more games and it's going to be awesome.
I can quit anytime I want.
Pretty much.
Yeah. But, well, I mean, my explanation of what I've been playing isn't quite as good. I've been catching up on the PS4 back catalog because I just recently came into a PS4. So I've been catching up on games, and I was playing Metal Gear Solid 5, which is, we'll be talking more about Metal Gear in a little bit, but I took a break from Metal Gear Solid 5 to play Far Cry 4. And Far Cry 4 is another example of that whole, like, oh, just one more thing, because like Ubisoft loves to put little achievements but different tasks and unlockables in front of you just to dangle that carrot. And oh my gosh, man, just like I have gotten almost no progress in the story, but I've almost unlocked the entire map because I've taken almost all the towers and almost all the base camps and like saved a bunch of hostages and did a bunch of races, and you know, I've hunted a countless number of honey badgers. It's just, I can't stop. I keep telling myself to do the story missions, and it actually got to the point to where I did a story mission last night, and I had forgot like what had happened in between, like the last mission and the mission I was on, because I was like, oh crap, like I've played for like 3 straight days, and all I've been doing is unlocking stuff. Like, what is wrong with me?
Well, I mean, sounds pretty much like every other player in. What is it? Well, started in Oblivion and then Skyrim players, you know, you never touched the main quest.
Oh yeah. I was really bad about that with Skyrim. Like, actually I was bad about that even when it was just Morrowind. I played Morrowind when it came out to the original Xbox, and I just remember playing that game and being like, oh my God, there's so much stuff to do. Like, you can do anything in this game. And I honestly had no idea what the main quest was for the longest time, because I would just go off and just do my own thing. It was ridiculous. But yeah, some of those open world games, just they put so much out there for you to do, and so much so that it detracts you from what you're actually supposed to do.
Yeah, but sometimes the side stuff is more fun than the main quest. I mean, to be absolutely honest, the Oblivion, when it came out, I played it for about 1 year and never touched the main quest.
Oh yeah, I was the same with Skyrim. I played Oblivion a lot, like early on. I played it on PC, and yeah, that was definitely a game where I remember I went all the way through the Thieves Guild quest, and I went all the way through the Dark Brotherhood quest, and then my computer died on me, and I was like, well, it was a laptop.
Oh no!
Yeah, and I was just like, oh no, why? Like, I'll never know like what happens. And then I got a new computer, I installed it. Started playing again, but then Shivering Isles had come out, so then I started playing Shivering Isles, and I never touched the main quest.
Nobody touches the main quest. I think it's just a fantasy. It's a story on the internet, but nobody knows how it ends.
Yeah, there's videos and stuff, but that's all made up.
It's all conspiracy.
Yep, it's an inside job. All right, so what we're talking about this week is Metal Gear Solid 2. So, Merrick, I hate to tell you this, but you jumped into the middle of the series. Because last week we talked about Metal Gear Solid 1. and what Metal Gear Solid 1 meant to video games as a whole, and also the higher points of Metal Gear Solid 1. For those that are, if this is your first episode of the podcast, please refer to the previous episode about Metal Gear Solid 1 so you can get the full breadth of the series. But for now, we're talking about Metal Gear Solid 2. So real quick, Merrick, what is your experience with Metal Gear Solid 2?
I used to play Metal Gear Solid 1 on PlayStation quite a lot and heavily. Metal Gear Solid 2, I don't have that much exposure, to be honest, so I'm a proper student.
Ah, okay. Well, fantastic. In that case, then, I'll give you the basic rundown of the game, and then essentially really it's going to come down to the pros and cons and then really the impact, but the impact is significant. So this is actually a really good class for you to hop in on. So Metal Gear Solid 2, Sons of the Patriots. Oh my gosh. Sons of Liberty. It's Guns of the Patriots. That's Metal Gear Solid 4. So Sons of Liberty came out for the PlayStation 2, November 12th, 2001. So the main reason why this game got so much traction is because Hideo Kojima was a genius and put the demo for this game on Zone of the Enders, which is another Konami project, Konami game. But nobody cared about Zone of the Enders. So Zone of the Enders got rented and bought so much because it had the only place you could get the demo for Metal Gear Solid 2. And what a lot of people didn't realize that the demo was kind of a bait and switch, because the demo showed you the first part of the game, because there are two main acts in Metal Gear Solid 2, but we'll get to that later. So Metal Gear Solid 2 comes out 2001 after the barnstorming success of Metal Gear Solid 1. So Metal Gear Solid 1 is important because it allowed Konami to kind of cheat the system when it came to just pushing out like real serious detailed graphics on the PS1. Because now, and I'm sure you'll agree, Merrick, like even looking back now, Metal Gear Solid 1 looks kind of rough. Like when you look back on it now.
Definitely.
Yeah, that game was for sure it was a beauty at it for the time. Like at the time, I remember playing that game and being like, oh my God, this is amazing. But like every PlayStation 2 3D rendered game at the time, no one moved their mouths. Well, there were no mouths, period. It was just, you know, polygonal skins on top of wireframes. But Metal Gear Solid 2, because the PlayStation 2 had so much power, you're getting an entirely different cinematic experience. And that's what this game really did for not just the series, but for video games as a whole. And the reason will shock you. So Metal Gear Solid 1, while having a really good story, is really solid gameplay. Now, I think you would agree with that. Like, there's a lot of really solid gameplay and really, really cool moments in Metal Gear Solid 1.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, the gameplay is the main thing in the Metal Gear Solid series until the later ones as well.
Yeah. I mean, it really does, like, they don't bury the lead when it comes to the Metal Gear Solid games. It's, you know, stealth action espionage. There's a lot of action going on, but there's also, you know, it's a sneaking mission. Everything is a sneaking mission, and you're trying to be stealthy, and it's not just, you know, run and gun, and, you know, you're not John Rambo in this thing. Well, Metal Gear 2 probably should have taken the action out of stealth action espionage, only because... And I just watched it just not even half an hour ago, but Metal Gear Solid 2 has about 5 hours and 20 minutes worth of cutscenes.
Wow, that is a lot.
That's longer than some games. Like when you break it down, that's longer than some games. So what's crazy?
Definitely.
Yeah. So what's crazy about it is the fact that like you're really just watching a movie that has a few button prompts, but this game, Metal Gear Solid 2, was rated as one of the best games of 2001. And a lot of people would be like, well, why would it get rated so high if it wasn't really a game. It's more like you're just playing a series of cutscenes, and there's a few moments of action in between. The main reason why is because Metal Gear Solid 2 proves that video games can be used, and this isn't the video games are art debate here. What this is video games can be used as a narrative tool, and not just in the whole, like, oh, there's some lines of dialogue and these guys are talking and it furthers the story. Okay, now you're into level go. Metal Gear is a movie. Like, Metal Gear Solid, if you smash the whole series together, would be an amazing movie. Like, it would be Lord of the Rings-esque when it came to just the depth and breadth and just how wide and weird and epic Metal Gear can get. But Metal Gear Solid 2 really allows that to get fleshed out in the beginning. Because you have to think about it. There's a handful of really important cinematic moments in Metal Gear 1. Most of them have to do with you killing a boss, like Vulcan Raven's death, Sniper Wolf's death, the big confrontation between Liquid and Solid Snake. Like, those moments are, you know, they're real grandiose and they're cinematic, you know what I mean? Like, everybody remembers how Vulcan Raven dies. Like, okay, pop quiz, Merrick, what happens when you kill Vulcan Raven?
Ah, you got me there. Remind me, mister.
So you take out Vulcan Raven, you hit him with the last Claymore and or C4, depending upon how you want to take him out. And then he falls to the ground and he's in this like shamanic like pose for a minute. And then the Ravens come down and they land all over him and then they fly away and he's gone. And it's like, what the crap? What happened to him? And like for a minute, you're like, did they eat him? Did he disappear? Is he dead? Like there's that like questioning moment. But each of the bosses has that cinematic moment. Metal Gear Solid 2 doesn't wait for that. It doesn't wait for you to encounter a boss. Like, okay, you killed Fat Man. Congratulations. Now, now here's a cinematic after he dies. But you're also going to get a cinematic before you fight him. Also, there's going to be one after he, you know, not just after he dies, but after that scene. And also two more before you encounter him and before the scene in which you encounter him. Like, there is a through line for each of these encounters, and it fleshes out a lot of the characters. So, really, what it comes down to is you're more experiencing Metal Gear Solid 2 than you are really playing it. And that's really important, because it doesn't make for a good game. There obviously could have been more game put into Metal Gear Solid 2, but it's still looked at as such a high point in video games, especially at the point where it came out in video games, because it proved that, like I said, that a video game could be a story-driven, cinematically impressive, display, a method of storytelling, a mechanism for explaining narrative. And that's really important, because as time goes on, as gamers get older, like myself, I'm 31 years old. I've been playing video games for a while now. As I get older, I don't want just a simple, like, hey, you're a dude with a gun, go kill demons. That's fun at times. But sometimes if I'm going to invest myself for a long period of time in a game, I want a reason to play. Like, I want to get invested in characters. I want to care about the story. I want to know what the hell the plot is. And I'm sure you can agree yourself. Like, sometimes you want something deeper than just, you know, hold right and, you know, continue on to the flag.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you don't want brain dead games anymore. Sometimes you do. I mean, I myself will be turning 30 as well, so I've been playing games for ages, and the brain dead games are fun. But as you said, you want a story, you want to see, and actually, you want to play a movie.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, everybody wants that dream moment of realizing when, like, some games can pull it off. Not a lot of games can, but some games can pull off the seamless, like, you've been watching a cinematic and then suddenly you're in control of the character. Not a lot can. A lot of them, you kind of see the break in the, you know, between cinematic and actual gameplay. But those games that can go from a real, like, dramatic, epic moment of storytelling, and you're just like, oh my God, I can't believe that, you know, twist X happened to character Y. This is amazing. And then suddenly you realize, oh crap, I'm playing the game. Like those are the moments that you want, especially myself, having played games as long as I have. Like, there's definitely an appreciation I have for when they blend that line of you're being driven by the story, and then suddenly you're driving the story. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of hate is given to Call of Duty Modern Warfare series, but it's also mainly a movie that you sometimes play.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Especially the first Modern Warfare game. Actually, there was quite a few of those moments, because I remember playing the first Modern Warfare and thinking, like, okay, is this a cutscene? Is this not a cutscene? What's going on? Okay, I'm still in control. Oh, crap. Like, I'm fighting the enemy now. Like, that type of thing.
Yeah, I gotta aim. I gotta shoot. Oh.
Yeah, I gotta move.
Yeah, it was a great feeling.
Yeah.
Because you really felt that you're in control of the story, even though, well, you're not really, you weren't, but you felt you are.
Yeah. And, like, actually, a really good example of that is Doom. Did you play Doom, the... 2016's Doom?
The latest one, no.
So, I'm telling you right now, you need to go and play that game. That game is amazing. But the reason why it's amazing is because it gives you the ultimate cinematic power trip. Like, the gameplay is tight, and the gunplay is really good. The music is amazing. But when it all smashes together, you feel like you're in an action movie. Like, you feel like you're Schwarzenegger in Terminator, and you're just wrecking shop everywhere. And it's a very empowering feeling. And it does feel cinematic in a way, even though it has, like, the thinnest veil of an actual story, it feels cinematic in a way, because, like, you're driving the action, you're driving the narrative in that moment. So it's definitely a game that you should play just to feel like I'm the guy the camera is on, like I'm in the spotlight and I'm the coolest dude in this room and all these freaking demons can suck it. Like, that's the game you need to play. Like, that game is probably one of the best power trips ever.
Noted.
Yeah, I'm telling you, man, if you get a chance, get your hands on a copy of that and just go to town. There's this, like, weird mix of moments where, like, you're playing and you realize that the music is actually going along in tandem with what you're doing. And it's this weird moment where you start to question whether the music's responding to you or if you're responding to the music.
That sounds trippy.
It is rad. That game has some of the best sound design, and I'm not saying like atmospheric sound design, like the like I said, the way the music follows with the action is probably one of the best designed and best constructed uses of like music to motivate your actions that I've ever seen in a game.
Sounds like something that you definitely want to play.
Yes, it is pretty flipping awesome, but we're not here to talk about Doom. So
yeah.
Metal Gear Solid 2, and just to wrap up the primary point of the lesson, Metal Gear Solid 2 is important because while it's probably a game that needs more game, it is a game that tells an amazing story, has you actually invested in the characters insofar to like you want to know what happens at the end, has more twists than an M. Night Shyamalan marathon, and just, for what it was doing at the time, when it was doing it on the hardware it was doing it, it's still now one of the most impressive games in the series. Like, when you take into consideration that my smartphone is more powerful than the PS2 was, what that thing was doing is quite amazing.
Yeah, I mean, the specs were not also on PlayStation 2, but it... You know, the titles did look generations ahead of PlayStation 1.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there was definitely a quantum leap in graphics, mm-hmm. in gameplay when it came between the PS1 and the PS2. And I still stand by the fact that the PS2 is probably one of the best video game systems ever. Only in the fact of, like, what it did over its predecessor. But the fact that, like, literally, I have an iPhone 6S. my iPhone has more processing power than the PS2 did. And the fact that Metal Gear Solid 2 does what it does on hardware like that, that in and of itself is impressive.
And it also means that you can play it on an emulator on your phone, possibly.
Well, I mean, you said it, not me, but yes, that is very true. And it's also kind of come to a point to where, and this is semi off topic, but this is definitely something that I'm going to bring up in later episodes, in a later lesson. But there definitely needs to be something said about the ease and ability of some of these games being preserved in alternative methods. And by alternative methods, I mean through emulation. Because, and there are a lot of people that would disagree with me when it comes to how games preservation should be achieved. But at some point, disc media is not going to work anymore. And in order to save these games, digital is really the only way you're going to be able to do it. So that's just something to think about for later lessons and later episodes out there, kiddos, because at some point we have to deal with the very real fact that some of the games that you love and some of the games that you would love to go back and play are not going to be available physically anymore. So, but that's another topic for another time. And yeah, I think that's where we're going to wrap up this lesson. Merrick, do you feel like you learned something today?
I feel like I want to play Metal Gear Solid 2, and I think I'm going to play it on a PS2, of course.
Yep, there you go. My mission is achieved. I have done what I set out to do. I've taught you something, and I have driven you to go and play and appreciate a game that you probably never would have had your hands on before. And that is the whole point of this show. I feel achieved and invigorated now.
I'm very thankful for this lesson. Thank you very much for all the knowledge I just acquired.
Oh, man. You were patronizing in the nicest way. Thank you very much for that. All right. So, so that is where we're going to wrap this up. Merrick, thank you very much for coming on the show, and I hope to have you on in later episodes as well.
Yeah, thank you very much. I'll be more than happy to attend at later time as well.
All right. So, once again, thank you for listening to Binary Gamer. We are a weekly podcast over on iTunes, Stitcher, Player FM, and you can also listen to us over on homeofnerds.com. Home of Nerds, remember, is your one-stop shop for all your news, reviews, tips and tricks, everything that is video games on the internet. You can go and find it over at homeofnerds.com. You can also go over to youtube.com/homeofnerds where you can watch awesome videos and check out all of our awesome Let's Plays and different things we put on there, to include Daily Nerd. Get a little slice of life on all your favorite nerds. And of course, you can check out myself over on Twitter at iFlipWithASwitch. And you can email the podcast, podcast@homeofnerds.com, if you have any questions, comments, concerns, complaints. And head over to iTunes and give us a review. It definitely helps us out. Gets more people listening to the show, because your 5-star reviews get us 5 more eyes on this show. So that is going to do it. Thank you very much for listening. Merrick, thank you for coming out.
Thanks again.
All right. Class dismissed.
I'm Jay Farner, CEO of Quicken Loans, America's premier home purchase lender. We've created a new way to protect you from unpredictable interest rates. Our exclusive Rate Shield approval. First, we lock your interest rate for up to 90 days. Then, if rates go up, your rate stays locked. But if rates go down, your rate drops. Either way, you win. Call us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com.
Rate Shield approval only valid on certain 30-year fixed rate loans. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. License in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply.